The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello and welcome to the Gridiron Show. As we are, I keep meaning to make sure I know exactly how many days it is until the season. It's a month today. The first game of the season is a month today. That's not really a month. It's like 4.5 weeks away. We are getting closer and closer. That means more and more nonsense coming out of training camps for us to enjoy and chat about, and plenty for us to sink our teeth into. Today, we're going to look at the most unrealistic or maybe unfair expectations. We've been looking at the over-unders for some of the teams around the NFL, and some of them are pretty astonishing, from a Super Bowl team being predicted to have less than 10 wins this year to a team with no hope having over 11 wins. We'll get into it. I'm Will Gavin. I'm with Gridiron editor Ollie Connolly. Ollie, how are we doing, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm all right. I was just hearing fun things around HR conversations with you. So this is very different to just us chatting about college ball every now and again. And yeah, it's real life. I feel like I'm an adult for the first time ever. We need to get into the NFL season so I can go back to being a big old child and enjoying sport again.
That is what I've been getting across the commercial. This is my third coffee of the day and it's just gone past 4 o'clock, which is how my day is going.
Love it. I suspect there are people at home who are probably like, I do that before 10 a.m. I will do in a few weeks' time when the NFL season gets underway. And I am going to be. I've already decided this. I was looking at my plans for Thursday and Friday and my meeting schedules and everything else. And I figured I don't have a meeting on Friday morning until like 10 a.m. So I can definitely stay up for at least the first two quarters of the 49ers' first preseason game, right?
Yeah. It's mandatory, I think.
I got to see what Trey Lance does against backups and in a non-competitive game, and it will form my entire opinion for the rest of the year. And he's going to be a bust based on what he does in that preseason games, or he's going to take us to the Super Bowl, one way or the other.
You can cite that throw for the next 2 years as you try and figure out that exact question. You can always default back to the first preseason game.
Perfect. Right. Let's deal with it. Most unrealistic expectations. We're going to start off with the Cincinnati Bengals. They are the Super Bowl runners-up. Admittedly, if they'd ever did an America's game for that team, if they'd won that Super Bowl, there would have been a lot of conversation about other quarterbacks throwing interceptions at rather convenient moments during a playoff run and things really falling into place for them. And they are a reason why I love to dismiss teams entirely from being able to make a run and then remember that, you know, there are runs like that that happen. And yet their over-under is set at 9.5 right now. And that feels pretty low for a team that have just gone to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and when you factor in that there's unlikely to be Deshaun Watson for at least one of those games, more and more it's looking likely like he won't be available for the whole season. I don't think Pittsburgh terrifies you if it's them. Every team in the NFL basically has a decent to great unit at this point. They have obviously a great unit on defense, but why would they not feel like they have the best or second best roster in that league? I think the thing that is out there, which is fair, you know, no one loves Lou Anarumo, their defensive coordinator, more than me. People listening to this podcast may remember that during the last Super Bowl week, people realized during the second half of that Chiefs game that the Bengals might go to the Super Bowl and they may have to discuss the defense. And I think I'm the only person who wrote about that defense, and I did so an unnecessary amount of times last season. The thing about that defense that was so special is how they would dramatically change week to week and just deploy one-off game plans, and sometimes it was excellent and sometimes it flamed out. That is really hard to sustain for even a season, which they somehow got away with last year. To sustain it into a second year and anything beyond is really tough. At some point, you just have to default to, do we have the players? You know, do we have such a talented core that our defense can be sustainable 3-4 years? And you have to have Hall of Famers. You can go through the recent history of the great defenses. Unless you have a Hall of Famer at basically every level, to get 2-3 years out of it, it's very, very tough. And I look at that defense and I really like those guys, and the interior is brilliant, and Trey Hendrickson is unbelievable, and they have maybe the best safety tandem in the league outside of maybe Buffalo. We can talk about Tennessee too. but it just doesn't quite have the on-the-surface talent that you'd expect. And so they kind of have to scheme their way to wins on defense. And I don't know how sustainable that is year over year.
I was looking at one of my least favorite stats, but just to get a bit of an idea of where people felt like they sat on it. It's the old strength of schedule. Now, obviously, it's a nonsense because it's based on the year before, and we know that it's based on the win-loss from the year before, whereas the Steelers, I think most people are expecting them to take a step back, maybe even have the first ever losing season under Mike Tomlin. We're all expecting the Browns to likely take a step back, unless you really buy into Jacoby Brissett or think that, you know, this whole setup wasn't just designed to make Roger Goodell look like he's riding in on his white horse and slapping on the year suspension anyway. But I'm kind of looking further beyond that. They've got the NFC South, which has a couple of the worst teams in football. Yes, it means they have to go up against the Saints on the road with that defense. That's a tough game, admittedly. And there are a few other difficult ones in there. You know, as the top of their division, the Chiefs, they've got the AFC East, so they get the Patriots and the Bills, but it doesn't look horrendous. And the offensive side of the ball, I mean, in theory, they should just hit the ground running and be absolutely fine. They've even gone... Like, that offensive line began to figure itself out. The running game's there. I can't figure out what it is on that side of the ball that we could be worried about. On the defense, are they any weaker? Are they any, like you're saying about the scheming, that's one thing. But this team looks no worse than it did 12 months ago. And okay, maybe we didn't expect a Super Bowl run 12 months ago. But yeah, it's bizarre.
I think that's the natural progression a lot of people are expecting. The Vegas maybe is buying more into the defensive regression. And they were just so boom or buster on offense, right? That is not a team that's designed brilliantly, play call brilliantly. In fact, they tip plays constantly. Everyone knows where they're going with the ball, particularly in the run game. And then there's the Mars down there somewhere and they score 7 points, right? How sustainable is that year? Yeah, I think most kind of the national or fan view would be, well, they have this unbelievable quarterback who might genuinely be the best player in the game, right? He's right there. There's so little between those top guys. With Burrow in there, you've got Jamar Chase, you've got Higgins, you've got Boyd. The only piece they've lost is the tight end. I reckon they can just figure that out, and that'll be a Burrow will make everyone look good in that role. As you said, they've readdressed the offensive line. It was the big area of concern. That I don't think they've done an unbelievable job overhauling that, but they've changed the profile, as we've discussed before, to kind of make it fit Burrow style a bit more, which I think can amplify the offense even more. So if I'm them, I don't look at any team in the league and think they can outscore us, right? You have all the pieces you could ever want to post, drop 40 on anyone's head anywhere in the league, and that's a pretty good starting point. And as you mentioned, that opening schedule, why would they not be 4-0 playing Pittsburgh, at Dallas, at Jets, home to Miami? They should be 4-0 going into at Baltimore, which would already...
I'm trying to talk myself into the Cowboys on the road, but they're a team we're going to talk about coming up. And I think...
Don't get me wrong, but do they go in there thinking they're at a disadvantage to the Cowboys?
I get there is that, of course, the argument is, and it comes back to what we were saying last week about the Russell Wilson and the Broncos, is that it's a very strong AFC that's arguably got even stronger, particularly if you look at what they've done in the West with the kind of arms race they've had going on there. They could improve in every area and not make the Super Bowl this year. Like, that is absolutely a possibility. You know, Zach Taylor could suddenly become a genius play caller and not the great mirage. I was trying to think of a much more polite way to say what I wanted to say. And they could still not go to the Super Bowl this year. I don't see the reason to fear for them in the division, in the regular season. I expect double-digit wins. I absolutely expect a postseason appearance. And beyond the fact that I've got this real soft spot for the Ravens this year, I fancy them to win the division as well.
Yeah, I love the Ravens, so I'm heavy, heavy on them, like you are. But then it does come back to, I hate boiling everything down to Joe Burrow. I'd love to get into the intricacies of their defense. But really, when you have a special one, you don't miss the playoffs, right? That's just, we've seen that for 25 years now, the new CBA. If he's as good as he is purported to be, and I believe him to be one of the three best in the league, those guys don't miss the playoffs. So it's weird to have an over-under total when one of the most famous guys in the sport is the face of the franchise. And as you said, they actually got better at the key area of weakness. So I would expect 10 wins, and all the more so if there's no Watson in the division. That feels like a pre-Watson suspension type value play.
On to aforementioned Cowboys. Over-under set at 10.5 points, and... you know, no one can guarantee a playoff run. No one can guarantee a Super Bowl appearance, but it feels like you can take a big step back, if nothing else, in an off season. I'm not sure they've taken a big step back, But for a team that went out in the wild card last year, it doesn't feel like they've addressed the issues that they needed to address in order to progress further this season.
Yeah, they lost key pieces, and the big thing they had last year was such outstanding quality depth. They would just roll off one pass rusher, the next great one would come in, and they've kind of lost that depth this year with the likes of Gregory going out. Them signing Anthony Barr, I think, is a little bit terrifying, and people are trying to spin that into a win. Oh, that means he can play off the ball, and then Micah Parsons can play as a pure pass rusher. Sounds great in theory. Anthony Barr stinks. And if they felt the need to go get Anthony Barr so that he can play in multiple positions so they can move Micah Parsons around, I'm concerned. Where's the game plan before signing Anthony Barr to move Micah Parsons around?
The reason Micah Parsons was so brilliant last year is the lack of predictability of where he was going to pop up in the scheme. Like, don't get me wrong, physical attributes, work rate, effort, all of that was there as well. Clearly, the kid's got a great footballing brain, but what they did so well was not do what so many organisations probably would have done, and much to Dan Quinn's, you know, much respect to Dan Quinn for doing this, but they recognised that what made him great is how multiple use he was, and they moved him around the formation. They made it so difficult to predict what he was going to do. They had him running stunts. They had him doing all sorts of things to throw you off. And yeah, okay, you've got a year of film now, but if you just turn Micah Parsons to a pure edge rusher, you kind of lose what makes him really special. I'm sure he would still be productive, but he goes from being a rookie that looked like an all-pro to being a productive pass rusher. That's probably not enough in a defence which has lost a lot of those kind of quality players.
Yeah, particularly in a day and age now where, as I've banged on about over the whole offseason, the whole point of defensive football now is to change the pre to post snap picture. So you want things that look like one thing pre snap and they become something else post snap. If you're just in a static four down and go defense, old school Giants, that is great. If Lawrence is, you know, Hall of Fame level and Micah Parsons Hall of Fame level, that's fine. We can run that all day. If that's not at that level, you have to have this new level of disguise, otherwise you're just getting toasted in the NFL. The thing they did with him last year that was really interesting was they didn't really move him a lot in-game. They just decided week to week, he's doing this job, he's doing that job. There was one week where he just played in coverage, basically. Having that ability to change week to week is so rare when the offense is game planning for where is this guy going to be, right? Then they're worrying about maybe you will move him, and it brings in that kind of Tyrann Mathieu level of reputational advantage of the quarterback looking for him constantly, even if he's not actually moving, for the fear that he might move and what he might do. Bringing Anthony Barr in, less even what he might do, maybe he doesn't even make the team, but it indicated to me they weren't happy with where they were at linebacker behind Parsons. So does that mean Parsons plays linebacker and he limits the off-ball stuff and he limits the pass rush stuff, sorry? Or does he play pure pass rush and they put Anthony Barr off-ball? And if Barr is off-ball, if you run through the middle of that defense, that is not cutting it. It is just nowhere near good enough. And there's question marks on offense too.
And if only, you know, the other team that I think a lot of people are picking for the division, it's not like they run the ball particularly well, or that's a huge part of their offense or anything in Philadelphia. So yeah, you know, I think they need to get a lot more. I mean, DeMarcus Lawrence, what's he going to look like? Hopefully with a full season. Lord knows if that will be the case. He obviously had the foot injury last year, but I don't know. I really don't look at their defense and fear it. The interior pass rush looks weaker than it did last year. Trayvon Diggs, you know, great all-pro performance, what, most interceptions since Everson Walls, but those aren't sustainable numbers. But also, he was a boom or bust guy who seemed to give up big plays or make an interception. Sometimes you need a guy like that in your defense, but not when you've not got the right players to then cover him. If you've got somebody who's just going to say, chase the big play, make the big play, try and jump the route, try and make those moves, you need other guys who are good in coverage around him, and I don't know if they've got that.
No, they don't. If you just run down the list, they don't have that kind of variability on the back end. That they have to try and make that more of a predefined thing. He was basically just saying, on coverages that you're not supposed to undercut. That's why he was so boom or bust, right? Is he's in landing zones that quarterbacks aren't even expecting because they're reading it out going, okay, so it's seven, so that guy's going to be there, that guy will spin to there. And this crazy guy is undercutting things that he's not supposed to do. You can predefine some of that undercut stuff, which I imagine they'll try and bake in this year. But it's not even so much the deal. I think offensively, I love Dak Prescott. I'm probably Dak Prescott's biggest supporter, I would suggest, of any of the peoples other than Mrs. Prescott. And maybe
Mama Prescott, Mrs. Prescott, and
I'd suggest quite a few people in the Cowboys facility as well.
Probably Jerry Jones. But I just look at that and I think, okay, so Michael Gallup returning from injury, Jalen Tolbert, who is a one-trick pony rookie, only is going to get vertical. No more Amari Cooper, who was their slant underneath guy. Dalton Schultz, unbelievable breakout season last year. Is that sustainable? Ezekiel Elliott is basically cooked. How much can they put Tony Pollard in, who they probably want to put in, but they've got the Zeke thing hanging over them that they probably feel like they've got to get him some extra reps. The line wasn't very good last year. That they've got three pieces this year that are kind of iffy. You've got the two great players. You've got the three iffy ones. It feels like a team who crested on a wave to last season. Perfect roster. Got the defensive performance they didn't expect. We were a juggernaut on offense for 10 weeks. They had so much depth on defense they weren't anticipating. And all those little pieces have been ripped out now. And I just look at it and I go, there's tons of playmakers. And I'd rather have what they have, which is like six of the best players at their position in the league. That is the perfect foundation. Because if you just get average performance out of those other pieces, you're probably going to the playoffs. But there's just something about all those other pieces when you start stacking them on top of each other and you look at the positions they're playing, corner, right tackle, your deep threat receiver. These are big, big positions for their system. And I'm not so sure.
And then on the other side of the ball, like I mean, the side of the ball you're now talking about, but I'm with you on Zach, on Dak, and I think they've, you know, the running back tandem potentially has the potential to be great. But, you know, Terrence Steele starting at right tackle after Lael Collins was cut this offseason. Okay, Tyron Smith continues to make Pro Bowls, but it feels like those are reputation Pro Bowls rather than performance Pro Bowls. Zach Martin, okay, that's a bright spot on the line, but the rest of the interior that used to be so good isn't there anymore. It now feels like a weakness rather than a strength, if not average to below average. I think with all of these, we should probably say whether we think they're going to go over or under. That's maybe what Mike was intending when he gave us this list. I'm going to say Bengals over 9.5, just to get that out of the way now. I'm going to say Cowboys under 10.5. I looked through their schedule. I'm giving them, even if I give them 4 wins over New York and Washington, which I'm not completely convinced by, I struggle to pick out another 6 wins that I feel really confident about. And it's 10.5, so really I need to find another 7 wins I feel really confident about. And they don't exist on that list. Yeah, I'm going under 10.5.
The thing about their offense too is it feels like everything has to be just right for them. I know Nate Tice has been big on this, that they have this like addiction to getting to the perfect play. You go through where they're at in the play clock and they get really low down into it and they become quite predictable, even though Kellen Moore's whole thing is this kind of cool and creative movement type system. They don't have a bunch of like, just go get me a bucket, go make a play type guys. Dak doesn't play like that anymore. He's Peyton Manning. He gets the ball out, he gets it to the perfect spot, he moves on with the game. He'll take 3 yards just to keep the ball moving along. They really dink and dunk their way down the field. When they're getting their front wrecked, and you're right on Washington, Washington's defense has the potential to wreck anyone's offensive line, right? And so now you've got to try and make some plays, and it's a real shit show, and there's bodies flying everywhere, and can I throw with weird arm angles, and can I get the ball into the flat, and Tyreek turns it into 12 yards, right? Go through that roster. I can't find those guys. These are guys who are unbelievable, slotted right into the system, and we're playing on time, and I'm ripping people apart down the field, and Dak's really smart, and he can just beat people with his arm. But if things start to go wrong up front, I don't think that the pieces are built to that. CeeDee Lamb isn't a slippery guy who catches the ball and is gone 50 yards. He's a guy who gets open through design or beats someone off the line of scrimmage, puts his hands up 25 yards downfield, and Dak finds him. So I think they're in real trouble if they're forced to kind of move to it to a secondary phase of the offense. And you go through that schedule, like you said, they are just seeing dominant pass rush after dominant pass rush. And I don't think they have the depth along the offensive line. So I'm with you. I'll go Bengals over and Cowboys under.
Let's move on to the Los Angeles Rams. Their over-under has been set at the same as the Cowboys. We do have to slightly curtail it with the fact that, let's respect the fact that their division is stronger than the Cowboys overall, depending on what you really feel about the Cardinals going into this year, and I guess the 49ers as well, but let's be kind. I still have feelings. Their out-of-division schedule is very difficult this year. Not only that, but Super Bowl coming off the back of it. You always have the bit of a hangover, bit of a loss of talent potentially. I'm intrigued what you think of the Allen Robinson hype, because I was listening to Jordan Rodrigue this week, who does the Athletic. She does the 11 Personnel podcast and covers the Rams for the Athletic. I think she's a really decent X's and O's writer as well. And she was talking about watching them in practice and trying not to get overexcited about it because she's trying to stay you know, level-headed and doing her job and staying. But she's saying what she's seeing there is the same thing she saw from Stafford and Cooper Kupp last year, where they're like getting down and drawing plays together in the dirt and then making these like changes at the line of scrimmage that McVay hasn't even handed them. And like, it just, it feels like finally Allen Robinson, after maybe the worst first, what, 7-8 years in the league from a quarterback perspective that anyone who can be considered an elite wide receiver has had, is flourishing with the opportunity to finally have somebody who knows what they're doing back there. In theory, if he is as good as they are projecting him to be, then that sounds like a pretty decent offense, even with some elbow injury problems for Matt Stafford.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we have to see on the elbow injury. Some of the reports last week from the same writer you were talking about there, that was really concerning. They're just like, oh yeah, it's he can't throw, so we'll see how it goes. All of the symptoms of a UCL injury, which is what they're kind of hinting at, which is the Tommy John surgery in baseball, which is really rare for a quarterback. And then you have to get Tommy John surgery, and that's usually an 18-month recovery. So they just kind of jab it and hope that it holds up for the year. So it's a concerning one for a guy who, that's how he throws the ball, right? He rips it sidearm. He's not an over-the-top classic delivery guy. He throws like a baseball player. It's a bit concerning. If he plays and he's absolutely fine, then they should club people. I mean, there's not a finer group of offensive weapons out there, really. Maybe the Niners, because they got the tight end and the offensive weapon in Debo that the Rams don't have. The Robinson thing, to your point, they needed a big body, big frame. It's third and long, and they're always an empty, and we can't manufacture space for Kupp every time, because they do a lot. Cooper Kupp is unbelievable, but a lot of that offense is manufacturing ways for Kupp to get open, be it through play design or bringing him into a stack, using a second body to get him clean off the line of scrimmage, because he just doesn't get off the line as cleanly as most elite players. He's kind of better in the second, third phase of the route, which is where he beats people at the top of the stem. So just having someone who's giant, who, as everyone deploys their resources to try and slow down Cooper Kupp and try and roll over the top of him, they usually have to deploy three guys to do that in the middle of the field. You just have a giant body, big long arms, and Matthew Stafford can rip the ball to him along the sideline. It's a perfect second fiddle.
The other report that was coming out, and as much as Stafford has been throwing and looking relatively comfortable when he has been, it sounds like pain management perspective so far, which is, it always sounds terrifying, but you know how many players are going through that at any one time. But it was also interesting hearing from Cam Akers about the wrinkles in the offense, because they went from that kind of, every run was under center with Goff, everything was just designed to deal with his frailties, to, I mean, you mentioned the empties, Stafford being in the gun, lots of the run coming out of that as well, loving to go with the empty sets. Well, apparently this year, it's kind of almost, they went from a, what we think of as a McVay offense, into a very Stafford heavy offense, into apparently a bit of a hybrid so far, is what people have seen in training camp. That excites me. Like the idea that we're going to see them do something a bit more multiple this year and do something a bit more out there with extra weapons as well. Like if Stafford's healthy, like you say, they should absolutely destroy people. And on the other side of the ball, okay, they've lost pass. Actually, we should mention the line as well. Obviously, you lose your left tackle, even though he was 40, he was still, you know, doing a job. And you're going to be playing a rookie by the looks of it at guard. Always question marks about those things. If there's an offense designed to hide those things, I guess McVay's is it. Is that me trying to justify it? I sound enough like a Rams fan right now.
That's more where that empty stuff will come in, because you can just eliminate a lot of that. No one's sending pressure in the NFL against Matthew Stafford in empty. All right, they're saying, can you pick us apart or not? That becomes the game, and Stafford is as good as anyone from empty. So they're not lighting him up from that, which means you can pretty clearly define who's coming, who's staying as an offensive line, and make things a lot easier for them. That's part of what happened last year when Noteboom had to slot in for Whitworth, is they just went, and that super spread stuff that you're talking about there, they bounced to that like 30% of the time. That was the bulk of the offense. So I think they can, and Noteboom was really, really good when he was put in there. That's why they extended him and tried to keep him in the offseason. So I have no worries about him. And the rest of the line is pretty dominant too. So we'll see on that. I think the thing you mentioned on them kind of blending their ideas is really interesting, because when Stafford first came, he basically played pure isolation football in Detroit. And then McVay runs no isolation stuff, or very, very minimal, as much as you can get away with in the NFL. And then last year they did pretty fairly blend the two in the first instance before ditching it both together and building an entirely new offense. So I think that My understanding would be they were trying, that's what they want to be. It wasn't quite working with their personnel. And then they obviously moved to an offense that did work and they won the Super Bowl. And I think they want to go back to the grand idea, which was blending those two philosophies anyway at the start of the year. But the way the league is now, it's really hard to get under center and run the ball now. So they're going to have to play from the gun anyway. And that would favor more towards Stafford's ideology.
What I was mentioning on the defensive side of the ball, Von Miller gone. That's a problem. Bobby Wagner added, not in the same position, obviously, but somebody who could, in theory, be a lovely piece to add to a veteran defense if he's, you know. We didn't see a huge amount of him compared with the player that we know he can be over the last 2 years, but that was in a very talent weak Seahawks team, as we've increasingly seen.
And completely misused, because they tried to ask him to do the same Bobby Wagner stuff last year in year 50 or whatever he is in the league as they did when it was year two and he was the most gifted athlete in the entire league. I don't for one second imagine that Raheem Morris will say, hey man, can you carry number three vertically and go get the quickest guy down the field the way the Seahawks are still asking you to? I imagine they say, hey Bobby, run through that guy's face mask downhill, and he goes, yes sir. And if anyone can still do that, it's Bobby Wagner. So I think they'll put him in the ideal spot to succeed, and he won't be a three down player necessarily anymore. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. Ernst Jones next to him I think is uber talented and could be pretty special for them. The Von Miller one, that to me isn't that significant of a loss. Really, they brought Miller in to change the profile of the pass rush more so than have him as a standalone brilliant player. Now, he was outrageously good when he got there, just as good as he's ever been. I don't think they want to be a 5-5 down and go defense kind of in general. That would be pretty aggressive. Most teams aren't doing that. They're lining five and dropping one out. So you can manufacture with Leonard Floyd, I think, some of what you got from Miller, because they brought Donald back. And having Donald and Robinson playing well inside, I think, is probably more important than whether or not they could bring Miller back.
Right. I am going over on the 10.5, even though, despite that difficult schedule, I kind of believe in the Rams. I think they split the tougher games in the division, and then they just win outside of it for the most part, to be honest.
Yeah, I spent all offseason trying to pick holes in them and see the pieces that are leaving, but I think it's the most confident I've been, and I don't have full confidence, of a team going back to back in at least 10 years. I can't see a fault, and not a fault as in like they're going to go unbeaten, because they are such a boom and bust side anyway. But I drop them in the playoffs tomorrow, I think they'll absolutely make it. And then I'm trying to think who has as many high end pieces as they do. And there's really no one that it's at least match. Buffalo is the one where I think Buffalo is just a better team overall. I think they're more consistent. I could see them ripping off 16 wins. I can't see the Rams doing that. But you put them in a one-on-one matchup in the playoffs, and there's no one more talented than the Rams.
Let's talk Saints. Over under set at 8.5, which I think with their defense feels relatively low, with hopefully a healthy Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas, feels relatively low. Do you ever want to bet on a Jameis Winston team going to 9+ wins in a season, though?
My big concerns is, yeah, I've written about this a lot with the defense, that you take out the Marcus Williams piece, and I think it's such a dramatic change for the whole defense that has gone a little bit under the radar. And I thought that was the best defense in the league overall last season. But they are so massively changing who they are defensively, and until I see it, I'm not going to believe it. And then you factor in that we're really banking on the health of Kamara and Thomas. And if you're looking at 8.5 wins, and I know you get to play
the Falcons,
I get that, and that's really good. But you also do have Jameis, who, as you said, is liable to throw any one of those games away just because he has a Jameis day. And you're betting on the health of two players who I'm not sure will be healthy. And an offensive line that was comfortably in the top 4 or 5 in the league, right, for 4 years running. And now you look at it, and it is just woof after woof after woof along the whole line outside the attack.
I feel that's very rude towards Ryan Ramczyk.
Weapons I said outside wise, the right tackle spot, Ryan Ramczyk is unbelievable. The rest of that group.
Yeah. Thank you. I didn't actually hear you say apart from the right tackle spot. So I'll let you off on that. I was thinking to myself, they've got one really good player. I don't know. I do feel like you say they're relying on Michael Thomas. He has looked good in preseason so far, but it's very preseason. You've got potentially a great rookie in Chris Olave. You've got Jarvis Landry. If Alvin Kamara isn't anywhere healthy, I'm not banking on Mark Ingram being any kind of impact. But there's enough there that if it goes right, it could go really right for the Saints
I'm just looking through their roster now, and I see ifs at every single position but the defensive line. And that's still, you know, Marshawn Lattimore last year was as good as he's ever been. It was an unbelievable bounce back year. The defensive front was the best in the NFL last year. They had the best light box defense in the NFL. They had the best two deep defense in the NFL. The two exact things you need in the modern NFL, they were the best at in the league. But there's still ifs over the safeties, ifs over the corner, ifs over the offensive line, ifs over the weapons, ifs over the quarterback. And as good as the good pieces are, when you start looking at the rest of the league and how many ifs they have, not so many have as many. Even the Panthers don't have that as many as that group.
How does that defensive backfield line up? Because I feel like Tyrann Mathieu and Marcus May are very similar players, one of which has played at a much higher level over the past 5+ years, but is a question mark with how healthy, engaged, everything he's going to be at this point. I like the idea of him going back to the Bayou and being brilliant, though. That excites me. I don't know. He's just a player I love so much, but I don't understand how the pieces fit together and how that secondary is actually going to look.
No, I have absolutely no idea. Taking the best free safety in the league out of the defensive backfield and dropping in a guy who is a linebacker in a safety's body, Marcus May, and Tyrann Mathieu, who, as you said, is a Tasmanian devil, put him here, put him there, spin him everywhere. One of those guys ain't playing deep, and they say it's going to be Marcus May, which the Jets tried for like 3 weeks. The Jets figured this out after 3 weeks and said, oh, this is really, really, really rough. He's a linebacker at this point. Tyrann Mathieu is basically a linebacker. He makes all of his best plays around the line of scrimmage now, and if not, coming top down. So they're going to have to completely transform their defensive profile. There's a chance they could take one of their corners and convert them to deep safety, but this is what I'm talking about. Just figuring out your free safety on the fly is not a way to go into a season, right? Even if you're not sure the guy's good, you'd rather at least know who it's going to be.
You're kind of talking me into under 8.5. In a division that has the Panthers and the Falcons, you're talking me into the under. It feels like the most push of all pushes, but yeah, I think I might go under 8.5.
What's
there you go, right, Ollie Connolly. You've had an influence on me.
Let me look through the schedule quickly. So they open up Atlanta, home to Tampa, at Carolina, home to Minnesota. So let's call that 2-2. Home to Seattle, home to Cincinnati, 3-3. Then things get really, really, really tough. They go at Arizona, home to Vegas, home to Baltimore, at Pittsburgh, home to the Rams, at San Francisco, at Tampa. There's a very real chance. Now, Arizona might not be good. The Raiders, will see. They have a terrible offensive line. But it's not beyond the realms of possibility they do not win or win only one of those games.
They might be last year's Cardinals. They might go into like week 10 at 8-1 and just be absolutely sitting pretty and then just collapse entirely. Maybe even scrape into the offseason, but not as a team that deserves to or should be there. All right, under 8.5, going for it. This is my favorite note from all of our lovely little running order that Mike has put together to us. I can't wait to hear how many wins you are going to give the New York Jets, who he's put on here claiming that essentially over under being 5.5 is an unrealistic expectation. Are we really thinking the Jets can't get 6 wins?
I will say, I think that's more on me for undue influence of the producer there, because I've been hearing a lot of talk about the Jets, but I didn't know the total was actually that low, because what I've been hearing is around the 7-8 win mark, and people are talking themselves into that because they think the Patriots aren't very good. I just think there seems to be a lot of belief that the Jets are going to be a lot better. When I look at their roster and I see the quarterback is still awful, and defensively, I like the pieces they've added, but you just cannot expect 3 rookies to come in and play really well. That just doesn't happen. You maybe get lucky and one of them's really good. Maybe you get super duper lucky and one of them's Micah Parsons, the best defensive player we've seen for some time, and he has a Khalil Mack type impact, right? You don't get 3 of them, and the rest of those pieces just aren't good enough.
I also like that whole Patriots aren't very good thing. I know that they got into the postseason last year, kind of limped into there, and that defense is slow. But they still got into the postseason with a rookie quarterback and a team that we looked at the roster and said it wasn't very good. they will be coached to 8+ wins, at least one of those, I imagine, over the New York Jets, if not two. I'm genuinely now doing the looking through their schedule thing that you've just done and trying to find the wins.
I mean, I'm with everyone else. Offensive line, really talented, like that, right? That makes sense. Tight end, love CJ Uzomah. Great player, excellent. Corey Davis, okay, not great. Moore, okay, not great. Wilson, big fan of his. You still have Zach Wilson as the quarterback. And I don't know what this magical setup is going to be dropped on. They drafted him to play in a system that is now obsolete in the league.
Okay, I'm going to give them... Everything you said there is correct, by the way. Well done. I'm going to give them wins over the Bears, the Jags. That's kind as well, because I think the Jags are going to be better this year. The Seahawks. I'm going to have them split with the Patriots and Dolphins, just because I'm trying to find six wins here. And maybe beat the Browns in week two. That would be six. Oh, it's ugly. It's really ugly.
Where is...
I really want Robert Saleh to succeed as well. He's such a lovely man. And
I like Robert Saleh, and having Sauce Gardner and DJ Reed is a good 1-2 cornerback tandem as you could hope for as a rebuilding team. Love that. That's great. Safeties are okay. Everything else in that defense is a problem. Show me where Robert Saleh, master of the four down and go, let's play two deep defense, where is his pass rush coming from? And if not through just general talent, get off the ball and go organic pass rush, where are the creative players at the second level or even in the safety positions where he can run some of the new creative fire zone, simulated pressures, all the stuff that all the teams who don't have the great pass rushers have to run to get some kind of pressure? Show me in that second level of the defense, where are even the good players, let alone the ones you can do creative things with?
Okay, we're going under 5.5 wins. I get it, mate. I get it. poor man. Do you think he gets fired this year if they only win four games?
That's kind of my initial pitch for doing this, because there's an owner element here where are the Jets, that is realistic, 5.5, you know, and if they go over that, great. And if not, I would not, you know, freak out. The roster isn't quite there yet, right? They haven't figured out the quarterback. Does Woody Johnson, the Johnson family, believe, like the people on ESPN, that they can win 7-8 games and they should be much better because they have a good offensive line? Like anyone, I love a good offensive line. I think Breece Hall has a chance to be the offensive rookie of the year because they'll run the hell out of the ball behind that line. Are they really going to buy into the notion they should be winning 7 or 8 games and then get upset if they don't?
Yeah, very possibly. Very possibly. Oh, God. Should we finish on the forgotten team of the NFL?
Yes.
I literally the other day, we talked about this when I went on TalkSport and talked about the Broncos, and I got tweeted by somebody having a dig at me for saying that I didn't think Russell Wilson would win another Super Bowl. And I responded with basically similar to what I responded with on the podcast, saying it's very difficult to win two Super Bowls. Only what 13 quarterbacks have ever done it in the 53 years. And some of those, you know, the guys that have won 4, 5, 7, ridiculously. And also it's a really tough AFC. And I listed off the Chiefs and the Chargers. And I mentioned, you know, I think I'm really hot on the Ravens this year, as we've mentioned already. And I'd mentioned all of these teams, and I said, you know, and I haven't even mentioned the Bengals, who went to the Super Bowl last year, and I just ignored the Titans entirely. just forgot they existed. And I feel like that is what Titans fans go through every year, no matter how good they are. And yet, I look at this season, I really like Mike Vrabel. I like his approach. I like his attitude. I think he's a good coach. I think he gets performances out of players we don't expect. I think he schemes that defense really well. I just think they look like a worse team this year than last year, not just because they've lost AJ Brown and tried to replace him immediately with a rookie, although that is a problem. Just doesn't look like the reloaded team they needed to be. And suddenly, you know, not winning that Bengals game, that one interception, felt like maybe that slipped through your fingers now.
Yeah, I think that was a closing of the window. And I would have liked to have seen them do something more dramatic in the offseason to maybe say, look, we got to shift this style. Because they got a preview last season when Derrick Henry went down of what this thing looks like if Derrick Henry isn't rolling. And all defenses have now built their structure to stop what Derrick Henry does well. Now, Derrick Henry beats anyone, you know, rising through the hole, it's still probably a wrap, and he's going to keep winning for, you know, the foreseeable future. But they had to try and find a way, I think, to move beyond that kind of mini Tannehill Derrick Henry era, and they drafted Malik Willis with this in mind, I believe, that maybe they could just throw it to him at some point and hope for the best, and they could be more of a chaos offense. But they had to do more than just take him, take Burks, and kind of go down both paths at once, where they drain the final drops out of the Tannehill and Henry of it all, and then maybe boot to the next era at the end of this season. I think they should have maybe been a bit more aggressive and kept AJ Brown and dropped another piece on top of it if they were going to try and have the one last dance situation. So, yeah, I mean, we can rattle through the holes if we want to along the offensive line, not having the weapons anymore. I love adding Robert Woods, but who knows, coming off the injury, cornerback room's a problem. The only thing that is a certainty with them is, as long as Vrabel is there, you mentioned it, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because he does not get enough credit for being a Warlock-type coach. You know, Belichickian levels of defensive schematics, where he just kind of gets given the rah-rah reputation, like he's Dan Campbell, because that's kind of like the attitude he puts out there. He is so far and away ahead of a bunch of defenses in the league in terms of what they do schematically. What defenses are doing now, he was doing 3 years ago. I'm sure he's ready to move beyond what those defenses are doing now, which has become in vogue. And somehow Brandon Staley's a genius, but Mike Vrabel isn't, even though Mike Vrabel's team are the number one seed in the NFL consistently. And I think it's because he's quite rah-rah-y. So I think they'll have a good defense again, but I do have massive, massive question marks over the offense this year.
I'm going to go under 9.5 wins. I think it's a good line, but it feels like at best a transition year and probably a start of a minor downward spiral at least. I always think that teams with good coaches have a chance to turn things around. And I find it difficult to start acting like they're suddenly going to go into the doldrums and become irrelevant again for, you know, 5+ years or whatever it might be. But well, it was longer than that last time around, of course. But yeah, I just think this is going to be a really, really tough year for them with the losses they've had, with the rookies coming in. Maybe they found a quarterback for the future. It doesn't look like it to me, but yeah, I'm going under 9.5. Sorry, Titans fans. I forgot about you on Twitter.
The schedule for them, that they have a 3-game stretch where they go at Buffalo, home to Vegas, at the Colts. That's the opening out of the 4 weeks of the season. That's 3 of the weeks to open the year. They have a 4-5 week stretch where they go at Kansas City, home to Denver, at Green Bay, home to Cincinnati, at Philadelphia. And they are basically in a head-to-head sprint against the Colts for the division. So I think 9 wins is fair. I think Mike Vrabel is so good, like you said, with Belichick. I give him 8 wins through coaching alone, and then the talent sabotages them and only takes them to 9 wins.
Oh, I hate ending on a downer, but that's what we're going to do. So sorry, Titans fans. Hopefully you prove us all wrong. Ollie, tell us what else is coming along this week. What other else should be people checking out from Gridiron?
All the shows across the network, make sure you subscribe to this feed. We do it as a buffet menu now, Will, which I'm sure you'll enjoy. That you can love just that. Subscribe to this feed. Don't have to subscribe to 6 different feeds for 9 different shows. Just subscribe to this one feed and the shows will drop in there and you can pick and choose which is the style for you.
Or just download all of them. And then as long as you listen to a couple of them a week, obviously the ones I'm on, but any that Ollie are on, that's what you should listen to. Any shows that Ollie, wait, hold on, that's... Yeah, just listen to all of them. You'll be fine. At least download all of them. Download and don't listen. I can't remember who was who used to say that, but that works for me as well. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Thank you for staying till the end. If you did stay till the end, let us know at Gridiron on Twitter. Always send us questions. We can always cover off the stuff you want us to be covering on this show. We are just a little over 4 weeks away from the regular season returning. Football is very nearly back, people. Get excited and keep looking at it.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.